Right, getting to know NZB, New Zealand Bloodstock. Cam Bray joins me. Firstly, Cam, welcome.
Yeah, good, Paul. Thanks very much. Pleasure to have you here in New Zealand.
I'm really, really enjoying the hospitality as the rain starts again outside. That's the third time, considering you guys said it'll only rain twice. I think it's joking. But I've really enjoyed it so far. We're here at the Karaka Sales Complex, and it's a massive eye-opener for someone that's only ever been out of Victoria probably twice in his life. Amazing setup. Must be great to be part of an organisation like this.
Oh, it is. You know, there's a lot of pride in what we've got here. You know, it's been around a wee while, this sales centre, but look, it's still world class, still very highly held in a very high regard, and it's a pleasure to sell here as an auctioneer. It's a sensational place to work in, acoustically out there, and it's a real one thing to emphasise is it's a real place, and you'll see it on Monday when you get a good lot come into the ring, when people all of a sudden start coming, it's such an atmosphere in there, it's quite electric.
It already has that feel. So getting to know NZB, I sort of want to get to know yourself. You've done a lot of things with me in the past 12 months. We've pretty much just got to know each other through coronavirus, I suppose, effectively, is what it's happened. And I suppose the way you guys adapt and yourself personally have adapted to attracting a different audience, I suppose, because, I mean, effectively, you're a very small nation over here, and all the rest. You're bat way above your weight average, if you like, as sellers on a world stage. But you're always open to try different things. Firstly, how did you become an auctioneer? How did you get involved in the auctioneering?
I was probably a... You mentioned it a couple of times today in my ADD. I'm a very...
Very ADD, if anyone wants to know.
I'm a very excitable person. And probably when I was a kid at school, I grew up in the country and it was, you know, played rugby, all those sort of things. And it was a big thing for a guy to be a stock agent in those days, livestock agent. And I got a job working as a livestock agent. I got shipped to the southern part of New Zealand, south in Southland, and it was purely by accident that I ever became an auctioneer. I was at a sale, and I was just a young fella writing down the prices, you know, for the girls in the office, and the fella said, righto, the young fella's going to have a go now, and, you know, you were left to do it. You couldn't, you know, you got clammy, and you said, oh, no, you're right. And he said, no, you're doing it.
Did you push up? Were you pushing up to try and do it? Like, was it on the radar?
At that stage, I'd always thought, you know, because you always looked up to these guys. You thought, shit, I'd love to be up there, that every bastard looking at me sort of thing, you know. But probably wasn't high on the register at that stage. And I did it, and I got over it. And next week I come back, I'm not doing one, you know, pen of sheep. I'm doing a run of them. And then, you know, by the end of it, I'm going to every bloody sale around the place.
Do you remember the guy that said you're up?
Yeah. Barry Monk's the guy's name, from Tiani he was, in Southland.
Because I didn't think you would have forgotten. Do you still keep in touch with him now?
I don't, probably in the last few years. Since I've moved to the horses, he was a real rural man, and probably our interests have sort of, you know. I came from a slight horse background, but to be fair, when I was down there, it was all farming sort of thing, you know. He was a real farmer. Like, he did like to have a punt, but we never really sort of crossed paths after I got into the horses.
There wasn't a reason, like, he didn't have a horse racing in the next race and he wanted to go and listen to it or anything, why he said for you to do that pen, or was it just one of those things?
No, just one of those things, you know. It was sort of, it's a very old school industry, and to be fair, this is a wee bit, but we've become very much more progressive in the last few years, where it sort of was, probably the older you were, the more important you were.
Yep.
If you get what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
And it was very uncommon for a young guy to be an auctioneer. And you get to a point where I was a trainee stock agent, yet I go to every sale in the district. And then my opportunities got to a level where I couldn't go any further because I was the young guy.
Yeah.
So that's when I elected to change. I moved back to Canterbury and did something else. And funnily enough, ended up going back to being a stock agent 4 or 5 years after that, where, again, I picked it up again. I was going away and doing bull sales and bits and pieces, and that's how I ended up with the horses. I started selling the standardbred sales in those days, and then I ended up starting doing some thoroughbred stuff with NZB, who I work for now, it just progressed.
And just freelancing, obviously.
Initially. Yeah, just a bit on the side, really. We had a pretty good understanding in the South Island because the company that is NZB today used to be what was called Wrightson's Bloodstock.
Yep.
And who I worked for was PGG Wrightson. Their standard breed department was a part of Wrightson Bloodstock years ago. So there's some great old relationships. And they didn't have any staff in the South Island. So if they came to the South Island to do sales, we would bid spot for them. And, you know, I got to know the guys and ended up, you know, doing a bit of selling for them. And then, bugger me, I'm sitting here at Karaka with you today.
Yeah. You said about you started doing this, the standard breeds. Are you from a standard bred family or is there a reason why?
There's a bit of standard bred. Yeah, there is quite a bit of standard bred in my family. Not necessarily my parents, but to their parents, it was a lot of standard bred. There's a lot of breeding industry, you know, through my father's mother's side of the family. You know, they had a small stud.
Is that a bit of the New Zealand history in a way that if you're in horses, you're either standard breds or thoroughbreds back in that generation? Or
Probably a little bit, yeah. Probably a little bit because, you know, you go back a few years in New Zealand, it was rugby, racing and beer.
Yep.
It was about the three things. It was, you know, up until 20-odd years ago, that was big things, you know.
And it's not a smart comment, is it not still like that?
Not necessarily. No, yeah. New Zealand's a very progressive place now, so to speak. You know what I mean? I look at it from, I'm on a racing club and we have these struggles here in New Zealand, probably the same as you do in Australia. There's just so much more for people to do now.
Yep.
Once upon a time, you couldn't go to a shopping mall on a Saturday, Sunday afternoon. Sunday afternoon, you went to races. You took your family, you had a bloody picnic, you punted your guts out or whatever you did. And that was how kids were brought up. Nowadays, we struggle. We're lucky, we're in a lucky position where we've sort of promoted ourselves to families and try and get those guys to come. This is from a racing club point of view. Because I know my introduction to racing, probably really racing, was as a kid going to the trots with mum and dad. And dad having a good day on the drink and having a few punts. And, you know, that was how I remember racing as a kid. So we've got to try and foster that for the next generation.
Yeah. So but dad only liked going as a punt, whereas your grandma and grandpa...
Yeah, they bred horses, you know. My grandmother, she still races the odd horse, yeah.
So why the fascination with the standard breds then?
Well, to be fair, in New Zealand's a funny place. The North Sea, the thoroughbred sales always were held at Trentham and Wellington, and then they came to Karaka, we have the thoroughbred sales. We're in the South Island, it had thoroughbred breeding, but it wasn't... you get some of the vendors come up here to Karaka, but it's not a huge base of breeding. We are the standard bred, probably the biggest pool of the standard bred broodmares is still on the South Island.
Yep.
So for me to sustain a business in bloodstock, I sort of had to go the standard bred way of going, to be fair. I did enjoy it. I love the thoroughbreds too, don't get me wrong. But for me, where my family is, where I grow up, where everything, it's a real standard bred place.
So you learnt and you adapted that way. You said there before you're on racetracks and the likes, but one other thing you said to me was things are perceived as being an old person's game with the auctioneering and the likes. Do you think that's one of the struggles that we probably have to do, change the mentality of people as far as racing people go, that a lot of the older people are in charge and all the rest? Do you think that's maybe one of the stigmas that we do have?
I think that's where the thoroughbreds have sort of left us for dead a wee bit in their industry. They have seen how progressive it can be, and by bringing young people in, that brings young people in.
Yep.
You know, all you got to do is look at watch the telly on a Saturday afternoon and see what goes on at Randwick. You know, the young people that go to the gallops.
Yep.
We would probably only see that on two or three days a year here in New Zealand, the gallops or the trots, to be fair.
Yep.
So I think I do think that, you know, you let that age group in, they're going to bring their friends.
Yeah.
That's where I think a lot of racing clubs, it's a challenge to get young people that are interested, that want to get into administration or helping with administration. But I think you have to get them on.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And it was just interesting when you were saying there before about auctioneers and all the rest. That's probably one way that you can stimulate more people coming in. But I suppose then it's got to be a workload issue too, is if the work's not there and you're still good at it, why do you step aside and just let a young bloke come in?
Yeah, but look, we are very mindful of that. You have to keep an eye out for talent because anything can happen, you know what I mean? And we're lucky in New Zealand. We've got a lot of good auctioneers here and they are world class, you know. Guys like Steve Davis who sells for Magic Millions. We've got Mike Kneebone who's our Australian-based business development manager. He's a director of the company here. He's an auctioneer, New Zealand auctioneer, lives over there. Morgan Carter, for argument's sake, down in the Waikato, and myself. But we're always looking and got ears open because it's quite a unique thing to sell a pedigree, racehorse pedigree, because you can't just sort of turn up, read it and sell it. You sort of have to breathe it. You have to understand it. You understand how the pedigree works, how the families are, you know. Because it's like anything. You can't just pick it up, read it, and know it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is one of the I suppose, the challenges that my thoughts are that people that are instilled in our industry need to realise that that's one of the challenges of getting new people into the game. It's all good and well to say, get involved in harness racing, this and that, but you've still got to be able to eat, breathe, and totally understand it without thinking about it sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things you have to be fully immersed, don't you?
Yeah.
I know, like what I do, you've got to be fully immersed. And you've got to be fully immersed not only in the New Zealand racing scene, but like, for argument's sake, what goes on in Australia.
Yeah.
Victoria, West Australia particularly, because a lot of our Kiwi horses end up there. And those horses are all in families that we have here.
Yeah. So you were doing a little bit of part-time work and the likes. How did you get to be part of NZ Bloodstock? NZB Bloodstock. I'll be in trouble for that.
How it'll come about, I ended up taking over for a guy who was a long-time standard bred agent here in New Zealand called Kerry Shaw.
So he basically retired.
He retired, yep. And I come on the scene. I did a season with him. We did a season where we toured around together, which was educational in very in many different ways.
Learned good and bad habits, I'm tipping.
Oh yeah, you know, we did some good stuff. But anyway, look, he still is. He's a really hard man, good sort, real good fun guy, and he was a hard living, hard drinking type fella too. You know what I mean? But I took over from him, and then I basically became a full time standard bred employee. We only had the yearling sales and the all age sale basically in those days, and you were doing pedigrees or you were doing bits and pieces for the pedigrees and different sponsorship things. And it was surprising from the outside, from me looking in, you had, three sale days of yearling sales and then possibly two winter sales. And you think, Jesus, it's 5 days a year. The amount of work that goes into those 5 days is unbelievable when you think about it. Now, so I was doing that. And then we went through a period where we were unhappy with where we were with the employees we had, and felt that the industry was, we were going down the wrong path for our industry. So we obviously had the opportunity to come here to NZB, who are a specific bloodstock company. You know, they eat, breathe and, live racing. And there's a lot of similarities about the thoroughbred to the standardbred. So we had the opportunity to come on board with them, and we've never looked back. It's completely rejuvenated the business. I'd hate to think, where we would have been if we stayed where we were.
It's actually quite interesting, isn't it? From these getting to knows, I did a whole heap of them, but Nutrien have just came into Australia. They have, not Australia, but Australia standard breeds, I suppose, but they have a different way of doing things and all the rest, and APG have been set and all the rest, and it's almost mirroring what you're saying to a degree in a way. And I'm not saying for one minute that one sales company is better than the other one. I do work for Nutrien. I do a lot of work for them, so in that sense. But it's just interesting hearing you say that, and it's Australia's almost following New Zealand's footsteps, albeit potentially 20 years behind.
Yeah, well, to put into context, we only made that change 3 or 4 years ago. So like NZB Standard Bred has only been going for, I think we've completed our third national yearling sales now. So we're going into our fourth this next year. But what it's done is it actually brought the Standard Bred sales business into the modern era. Probably because, and it's nothing against my previous employees or any employers or anything like that, but just the economy of scale. Because we have a thoroughbred business, which is a huge multi-million-dollar business, and as you can see, out here at Karaka, you know I think it's 8 barns here, completely chocker for that week we sell the thoroughbreds here. In retrospect, we only use 2 barns for the standardbred sales. So, you know, when we're talking pedigrees and bits of it, we already own a lot of the, you know, computer software, and, you know, we have the ability to, because we have an insurance division, we have an air freight division, we have a finance division, where at our last business, we didn't have any of that. So it's actually now become, it's really lifted the standardbred sales business in Australasia, I would say, because now we have a lot of Australian clientele can come to us, because they know now they can come to us, they can buy a horse, they can ship it with us, they can insure it with us, they can finance with us. Everything.
You obviously enjoy being part of a group like this with NZB. Were you nervous or anxious when you, or was it just something that you said, no, we've just got to do it?
I was dead set on going, to be honest, because I could see the job that they'd done, and working with them, I sort of had a little bit of an insight into how they did things. And I really liked how they did things as far as their own sales with the thoroughbreds and how they, you know, how they did things for their vendors and how everything went about, it was going to be a positive for us. Yeah, there was a no-brainer, really.
To be a part of it. You say 3 or 4 years ago, so the last year and a half, basically, or I suppose just over a year now with COVID coming in and changing things up. They're an amazing group. They embrace change. And I'm going to do a podcast with Graham probably tomorrow about the history of this place, and it is, anyone that hasn't been here, even if you come over and there's no sales, just come out and have a look at the place, because the history here is just terrific. But I actually said to Graham there at one stage, even in his office prior to leaving his office today, I admire the way they embrace the new and all the rest, and it's something that you've been at the forefront with, like as far as trying to get stuff on my page in a different light to be able to get it out there for people. Do you enjoy this new frontier?
Oh yeah, I did a radio interview yesterday with Jason Bonington and Toby McKinnon. As I said, the bloodstock sales business has become very progressive, like overnight.
Yep.
Which historically has been a touch feel, you know, see, you know, business. We're now doing it, you know, we're taking photographs, we're taking video. And like you think back to when I started, historically, yearling photographs consisted of a headshot and a side-on shot of a horse. No one did a video. No one ever thought of taking photos of hocks or fetlocks or, you know, anything like that. So when you... It was thrust upon us because if we wanted to continue trading, we had to do it like this. Like we had this sale we're having on Monday last year happened at the very end of the mandatory lockdown here in New Zealand. So we had no sale. It was all done through our online subsidiary Gavel House. Like we had to do huge development to that to handle the photos, the videos, you know. It's been really good. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a hell of a lot of fun. It's been a lot of work going behind the scenes from the guys here, which... fantastic, because we talked about earlier on in the year with the online bidding platform for internationals that couldn't get here. Again, we built all that through COVID, which has allowed us to continue trading.
Yeah.
Although we don't probably use it in the standardbreds quite as much as the thoroughbred guys do. Yeah, that was just, it's fantastic.
There's two parts of what you just said then, but Mark Hughes basically, I suppose, teased me with through my Woodlands connection. We did a couple of videos promoting the yearlings and promoting the horses as they're up and coming for that Gavel House auction and making sure people were aware of them and getting the word out there. It was incredibly addictive, that whole site. I remember going to work on the Monday and I thought, oh, I'll just have a bit of a glance on this and the rest. You guys must love that part. That I'm sure I'm not the only person that said how addictive it was to just be watching. I had no intention of buying, but watching the reds and the greens and the flashes come across your phone or your computer as you were sitting there watching them. I mean, that's technology done properly, isn't it?
Oh yeah, no. And to be fair, I was a complete wreck that day. I was sitting there just going over any possible thing that could go wrong. I was worried about it. I was lit up like an alarm clock because we had made a bit of a big deal of it. In our office in Christchurch, you know, Rach and Grant and there, you know, they got the drinks in and they got the nibbles and everything. I don't think I drank a thing. I don't eat anything. I just sat at my desk, you know, half gooey about everything because I was just thinking, this is all, you know, we're in the hands of the gods here. And if shit, it's the fan, there's going to be, who are they going to come for?
Yep.
But it worked great. And we had such a great sale. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
We'd sold horses. You know, Australia, we had a huge buy-in from the Australians. We'd sold horses to American connections, Canadian connections. And it probably shows a little bit in likes of, we talked about the Tallman family buying that filly they did. They've turned that into a $50,000 sale back to the people they bought it from.
Yeah, and we'll actually keep going down this path. I am going to take you back to one part there before with the video. So anyone wants to listen to that, please do, because it's a little bit important on what Cam says. But pinhooking is a funny word, pinhooking, because some people, it's almost like an X-rated word, isn't it? It's almost like porn. If you say pinhooking, it's like, oh.
It's a dirty word. It seems dirty.
Yeah, it seems to be that way. But it's actually not. And it's a way, like, our industries revolve so much supposedly on TAB and TAB turnover and the likes. But this is a way of investing $1 into the racing game and turning it over and over several times. Maybe like a horse might be sold four times before it's a two-year-old, all through legit sales, you know, like going for a ready to run at the end of all these sales and the rest. And it's turning a dollar through our industry, which through COVID we've found how much money racing does turn over. All of a sudden governments all over the world, not just in Australia or New Zealand, governments all over the world are sitting up saying, hang on, this is bigger than what we thought.
Yeah.
And to be able to turn those dollars around, the pinhooking component of it, and it's only a young market, but you guys must be excited about this sale. And I know there's already some Aussies over here, and I know there's a lot of Aussies that are going to be tuning in through electronic ways of being able to watch it. That must be an exciting new avenue that you probably weren't thinking about 3 years ago.
It's been historically, it might have been not necessarily pinhooking, but it might have been you're a one mare breeder and you have a colt and you need a mate for the colt. So what you would do is come to the all-age sale and what it was in those days, you buy yourself a colt mate for it. And then by default, you might put it in the sales. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you made money, you made money. If you didn't, it didn't matter because you needed a mate for the colt. But nowadays, it's been going on for a long time in the thoroughbreds.
Yeah.
It's a serious business. And look, we have drafts out here pretty, you know, it can be, you know, 50, 60, 70% of their draft is pinhooked. Ready to run sale, be even higher.
Yep.
It just creates another market. And guys that want to survive in this business, you know, a lot of trainers here in New Zealand, they'll get horses up and going, as you full well know. Your Mark Joneses and your guys like that, they are selling trainers. They are selling horses all the time. They don't have to necessarily be a two-year-old, but they're going to be a horse that's going to get up to a certain level, sell it. It's no different to what we're doing. It can be, there's a stigma about horse trainers doing it because they only sell them because the ones that don't bloody, you know, run fast enough, in it, which is actually a load of...
You can say whatever you like.
Load of shit.
Yeah.
Because this is guys trying to make money.
Yeah.
And they're making money in an industry that is a great industry to make money. And it adds income when income's possibly not there. It's a bit more, you know, it makes it a bit more seasonal, if you want to call it that. And that's where we are pretty focused on trying to create. We haven't, obviously, you know, Nutrien did it last year with their ready-to-run sale. We had a big, you know, we were big ready-to-run sellers years ago, specifically through two main guys, Michael House, Greg Payne. That market sort of slowly died away in bits and pieces. And I think there's enough of a market there now and enough for a young guy to try and get going to buy Wingling, and you don't have to pay a, you don't have to pay a heap of money. Get it up, get it going, give them an outlet to sell, because you know, and we have a good, I have a good relationship with Mark Barton. We've talked, you know, several times about this, that the top end of the yearling sale market is good, and it's always going to be good because you know they are good horses. You know, mathematically they're going to be good horses. There's that middle market that in both countries can be a little bit vulnerable, and that's where the ready-to-run market will aid it.
Yep.
Where a guy can, you know, go and spend his 10 or 15,000 and then possibly turn it into a 30-odd thousand-dollar horse, possibly, yep. You know. And it's no different to a yearling sale, someone spending 11,000 for argument's sake, turning it into 50,000.
Yep.
Which, that's a great story.
And we've got to be careful on that too, because there'll be people listening and they'll be going, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go pinhook. It doesn't always work. You've got to back your judgment. I did a podcast just recently and I said where physically at that sale on that day, a person selling horses turned around and said to the guy that handles the checks, the boss, just sell it for whatever because they're not selling. Yet when they would have rocked up to that sale day, 2 days, they might have been expecting to get 20, and I know they got 7 for the horse. They just said, just sell it for whatever you get for it. They are not selling. So don't think you're going to come here.
No, it's not mathematical.
And buy a horse.
Correct.
That is dead set going to change the world, because it could be just out of favour.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like that could be the day before the sale. But reality is, there is still plenty of bargains here to be had. Mark Hughes from Woodlands was telling me the other day, I think it was hard copy or my hard copy, I think he said was $4,000. I think Party On was about $7,000 or $8,000. I mean, they're great stories. Those two horses are, but there'd be a lot of horses through the middle. And then you go saying about, for the Aussie people listening to this, that the nutrient sale is there. So you have that option of being able to now pinhook them,
yeah.
And put them back through that sale. And there's talk with Nutrien that there's going to be a ready-to-run sale in Australia. So again, overseas investment for you guys here in New Zealand.
Yeah.
People can come over here, buy a weanling, yeah. On May the 3rd, which is Monday, and be able to then turn around and hopefully turn a dollar for themselves when they can get it back to Australia and go from there, as the Toolmans did. And the where that helps you guys.
Oh, exactly.
Is I know that Alana and Gary are both,
yeah.
Already picked up the catalogue several times. And they're folding their way through what they want to look for in this ready to run sale.
And that's where, and I'm speaking from a bloodstock sales company to the industry bodies, that's where we can't forget that if you're selling a horse, 9 times out of 10, you're either going to breed another one or you're going to buy another one.
Yep.
Or, you know, people in this business are passionate about this business, because if you, you know, it does test your passion. This game does, doesn't it? You know, and these people, they will continue to turn over. And if it means we've got to sell it as a yearling, sell it as a weanling, sell it as a yearling, sell it as a 2-year-old, sell it as a going horse, generally that money will come back into this business. And especially here in New Zealand, we are very much a trading business. It's quite a magnified industry here in New Zealand now. That if you aren't going to compete with the big bangers, that doesn't mean you're a no good horse. You know, use the argument of, say, Spellbound, who's gone over one, yep. First up, you know, probably not at 100% at first start. But reality is, she probably just wasn't going to
measure here.
She was an outstanding juvenile, but there's just probably enough around there that she probably wasn't going to quite do it. You know, to her to go away over to Aussie. It's still a great thing for her, and they've retained the ownership. In that case, they haven't sold her. But I don't blame people selling them over there, because the opportunities are there. Locks of Aladdin, another great story.
Yeah,
he was sold out of the NZB sales here.
he's an enormous story, actually.
Oh, well, you know, bugger me. He sold. He won our 3-year-old pace on New Year's Eve. I think he was sold just prior to Christmas for 80 something.
It was as dear a horse as the McCormick's ever bought, and I think Dad just turned around and said, no, just buy it. And it was the best just buy it ever, he said.
$250,000 race it won.
Yeah. And it was Group 1 race, wasn't it?
And listed here. Yeah. We don't quite give away.
Hand them out.
We don't give away the Group 1s quite like that. I'd love to. Tell you, I'd love to be able to sell Group 1 graduates, but again, look, it's done a super job over there.
Yeah.
First up, won the Mildura Guineas as a 3-year-old, gone to South Australia, doing a job there.
And I'll tell you, anyone that is listening to this and actually likes Aladdin, there's definitely two. I think there could be three. Aladdin's out of that family. He's three generations back on two, definitely on two. And the horses are by Sweet Lou. Both horses
great
are.
Families too. The other good horse in those.
Pacing,
both those
Pacing Grace.
Pacing Grace, Miracan Dealer's family as well. So.
And you can vouch for this. I don't have a catalogue in front of me. So I know. And they're middle. Of, they're actually middle of the sale. Yeah, well, I had a plane trip to sit on it and all the rest.
Just turn the page. You're on the wrong pedigree. Turn the page.
Shush. There is a reason. There's no camera. But, I mean, yeah, this is a getting to know, and you and I can rabbit on, but this is the exciting part. I've found it wasn't, you know, the way Campbell's comments was going to go, but getting the opportunity to come over here and actually see how you guys operate, the fact that you are in a selling country from where you sit, it must be, yeah, you must love it in a way.
Yeah, we do love it, and but it's out of necessity.
Yeah.
You know, for us to survive, and when I say us, I don't mean personally, yeah, great people of our industry, it's a way of survival.
Yeah.
And that's how we stay in this fantastic industry, you know, and I know you're very much passionate about your industry over there. It's fantastic business to be in. But the cold, hard reality of it is we have to sell.
Yeah.
And some people will say it's been harder to sell to Australia over the recent years, but we still have to sell.
Yeah. Regardless. Why is it so harder to sell to Australia?
Import taxes and, you know, different things.
We're not going down there. You know, we won't. We'll leave the 15% out of it. Yeah. I got Mark Hughes a couple of times this week. God knows it'll probably come up a couple of times. But, I mean, those things must frustrate a little bit from afar, you guys, here in New Zealand.
What it does, yeah, we'll still sell them, is the reality. It'll mean that we probably have to sell them for a tick or less or whatever. But it's not going to stop us from selling them because that's how we survive. It's the same with America for the mayors. Tell you what, if we get the planes there, we'd be selling a hell of a lot more. But with COVID-19 and everything, it's just a little bit tricky. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a fact of life. We've got to sell these horses. They can't all win. There's only one winner in every race.
One of the things, Cam, I wanted to talk to you about and like just sort of getting to know you, and you are passionate about it. I'm talking about videos, and like I've done a few for Nutrien and all the rest, and now that you can buy horses online, you said there before that headshots and front-on shots were about all you could get. Now, Woodlands, Brecon Farm, I think this year they really raised the bar with their yearling sales that you guys had in February. Not only did they do some cracking videos and all the rest, and even though there's possibly a couple of little chips in some of those that, you know, some people don't like the landscape shot, they want to see a yearling, they actually want to see the yearling first, so they don't care if you've got rolling hills or you don't have rolling hills, they actually want to see the yearling, and that's what they're on there for. But the way they've evolved their businesses, some of those videos, Katie, I forgot who sold the two really high price.
The prices.
Their Katrina video, Katrina. Yeah, their video work following those horses walking was next level. One, it's a necessity for people, both sides of the ditch, isn't it? For you guys as well as for people to be able to embrace this new way.
Yeah, and to think that stemmed, like that concept was only 6-7 months old. When we decided, well, when we were forced to abandon the May sale here last year and we went to Gavel House, James Jennings, you know, the boss man, he went to Andrew Gresson and said to him, can you please come up with me from a veterinarian's perspective, not your Woodlands hat, your veterinary hat, come up with a protocol for me to show a series of shots that can give us the best, you know. So he came up with it for us. Now, there's two things that could happen here. You know, we have progressed so far so quick. We've got to be careful we don't end up going down the X-ray line like the thoroughbreds have, because that has really contradicted the sales of that, because all of a sudden OCDs and, you know, risks of, you know, lesions and belly chips and everything.
And effectively, all it does is created a heap of bargains.
Yeah, it has, and it's created a lot of work for the vets, both positive and negative for them, because the vets that are having to, you know, put their neck on the chopping block, giving these reports, and then you've got people contradicting them and everything like that. where we at here in the stand-up breath business, I think is a fantastic place. As you say, there is we did some massive. Our marketing guys and girls do a great job. We've only got a team of three that do all the marketing for both Standard Bridge and Thoroughbridge, and they canvassed huge number of international clients, probably more from the Thoroughbridge angle, saying to them, look, what did you like about the videos? What didn't you like? And as I think I've said to you before, you know, they talked to a guy who said, the next time I see a panning vision of, you know, coming over the hills, like, I'm going to throw the bloody computer screen out the window.
Thoroughbred Kiwi trainer,
But that's when a guy is basically going through a catalogue, and that shows you probably one thing, the quality of our catalogues in New Zealand, that people actually want to go through them lot by lot by lot by lot. So something to bear in mind. But like I reckon a lot of guys did it very, very well. But all the thing I think I've said to you, and I'll say to anyone, what you have to bear in mind is what you are providing someone is a parade for someone that can't be there.
Yeah. And I think this is a key part of it, and it's something that I watched the other day at the Nutrien sale, and yeah, I'll let you keep going. But I think people should really listen to this when they're thinking about their videos.
When you're thinking about your videos, you pull them out of the box and you take it out and you show a fella the horse, you walk it up and down or what, and you know, if it toes in or whatever, they may ask you to trot it up or whatever. For me, you would walk it up, walk it back, you know, away from your bits and pieces. And if it does, like, no point hiding anything in this business because you'll get found out pretty bloody smartly. If it toes in and you think it warrants at a trot that it trots nice and straight, trot it up. Or, you know, that's where I think people go to buy these horses to try and eliminate the risks. So that's why I think just bearing in your mind that if I was taking this horse to a sale, what would I have to do?
And that's sort of one of the key components, because as I said the other day at Nutrien sale, they're getting a good run out of this. Nutrien, actually, they're not actually paid sponsors just yet. I'm working on that, Bardo, if you're still listening.
He won't be listening. He would have switched off by now. We've been 2.5 hours,
haven't we? You watch the sales and you watch any person looking at a horse, and they watch them walk backwards and forwards, straight up and down. Sometimes they go to the side, but only sometimes. Most people would go up and down and then just have a stand back and actually have a look at the horse, and then just more or less listen to the person that's selling that horse as to what they like about it. Yet sometimes with the videos, we try to give too much. We probably try to give more than what they're after.
Correct, yeah. And we become almost too cinematographic. You know, we're not trying to make a short film. Yeah. We're basically giving raw nuts and bolts, you know, because a trainer who may be looking on behalf of an owner, or a vet that might be looking on behalf of an owner or whatever, they only want to, you know, they can cut through all the shit that you give them, if you so to speak. They know what to look for, and they know what's going to catch them out, you know.
It's just interesting because it's like what you said there about being cinematic, the word, I can't even get the word out anymore. But a lot of people did try to go flash and too big. The farms here, weighing them, Woodland Stud, and I'm pretty sure Brecon Farms, they weighed them. They scoped them. Woodland's definitely scoped them, and
Brecon did, yeah.
And Alibar did, I think.
Might well have done.
People were watching those, and I know a lot of the Aussies were watching them, and they're like, oh, look at this, it's amateur hour, because there's a camera sort of floating through the air. But what it actually was a scope going past a horse's brand and then going up its nose, so people could see that, yep, that's that horse. So raising the bar, bringing something new to it, but also doing it in a professional manner by scanning that brand so you can say, this is that horse, and we're going up there and the likes. So there are ways of evolving it. Do we run the risk, though, of giving maybe too much information that then people stay at home and they don't come to the sales, a little bit like the races and a little bit like the football, you know, and the likes? Are we running that risk of maybe giving too much information?
I don't think so at this stage. I think one thing that the auction has is just that real ability to excite someone.
Yeah.
that if you're at home behind a computer, you'll do it if you need to. But if you can get here and you want to come and be a part of it, you know, it's great to be a part of. And I think that's something we'll never lose sight. That's why auctions work.
Yeah.
That's why they still sell, you know, here in New Zealand at the present, every bloody house that goes to this, goes for sale is bloody near an auction.
I think the last time I bought a horse at the sales was probably 15 years ago. Yet I've missed one sale in Melbourne probably in that last 15 years. Like I'm a sales junkie, but a lot of people don't come. They don't understand what they're missing.
Exactly. It is outside of the actual racing. It's probably the single biggest event.
I think it's better than racing. I actually think it's better than the race day because you see people in a totally different way than what you do at a race meet. Because, you know, I did a story with Josh Dickey before. Josh gave me that all the time because he was at home. Tonight at the races, if I rocked up to do that same, you know, story, he might have only had 5 minutes because he's busy because he's got to yoke the horse up and everything else like that. Yet if we tried to do that here at the sales on Monday morning, Josh would give me all the time again in the world because I think it's that little bit laid back. It's almost like they're at home, yet they're away from it.
And it's a great celebration too. The sales are a great celebration of our breeders, which, you know...
Without breeders, there's no racing.
We can't forget that, yeah. They are the backbone of this industry. They effectively take a fair chunk of the risk because they're going to a stallion, a decision made 3 years out from sale. And some get it right, some get it wrong. And that's just like backing a winner.
Yeah.
Isn't it? You get it right, you get it wrong.
Yeah, and as your allure, like you and James were saying to me before, was it Don Eduardo? Was the horse and you guys, well, James could remember where Gay was and had him to bring in the landline because she didn't trust mobile phones because back then the mobile phones had only just, he could actually say exactly where they, so it's almost like you can remember where you were when you know, Saintly won or any of these horses won a race or, you know, you can remember where they were when they bought, you know, $3 million effectively, unfortunately for Connections, a lemon at that stage. So,
yeah, like it's just the theatre of it all, you know, and that's one thing we'll never get away from is that an auction is theatre. It's raw emotion, it's high energy, it's everything that, you know, racing really is, to be fair.
What's next for Cam? Like, just want to keep getting bigger and bigger as far as... Is that one of the issues or the struggles with an auctioneer?
For an auctioneer, like we're probably fighting a losing battle to the computer in some degrees, although I've just gone on a rant about how, you know, you'll never lose the auctions. You know, we're talking about winter sales here for the Thoroughbreds. I remember the first sale I came up to here went for, I think, 3 days, where we sold, you know, a day worth of weanlings, but near a day worth of broodmares, then a day worth of mixed bloodstock. Well, this year we'll sell 130-odd weanlings.
Yeah.
So
instead of a 3 day sale, you're basically going to have a pretty easy 1 day sale.
A pretty easy one, you know. But again, at the same time, for me, I get a hell of a lot of enjoyment out of just doing a good job for our people, you know, seeing them happy and going through that journey with them from, you know, some contact me in regards to what stallion we should go to, you know, what mare should we buy a mare, trying to sell them a mare. To the whole process to actually selling their yearling, it's a great experience, and I just want to be able to do that to the best of my ability for them.
Yeah, you're going to raise your arms again, like you did, like the prophet.
Oh yeah, no, well I am the prophet probably.
I'm going to use that photo on the front of this. Don't you worry about that.
So I can't see myself doing anything else, to be honest.
And you just love it.
Love it.
May the 3rd, which is Monday coming up. Don't forget to tune in. If you're in Australia, if you're in New Zealand, though, get here to Karaka and what time's the sale start? I should be all over. 12 o'clock. No. 12 o'clock. It does.
12 o'clock New Zealand time. Yeah. So.
Yeah, which is about 2 o'clock Australian time.
No, 10.
10 o'clock Australian time. Yeah. No wonder I got in trouble from the bride when I rang her this morning.
I wondered why you arrived a day late. I thought you were meant to be here yesterday.
Mate, I enjoyed it. Hopefully, people got to go a little bit of an insight into you and have a think about their videos and how they put them up. I think that's it's. Pretty important. I found it, as I said, you sit back and watch people and what they look for, and it can be anyone from a Mark Purden to Paul Campbell when they're looking at horses. Majority of the time, they keep it pretty simple at a sales complex.
And one thing that you always forget, and I know this because it's just how business works, but a vendor asking a trainer, what did you think? A lot of them will tell you, you know, it's fantastic. Because they'll never want to offend you. But the feedback we received was very, very glowing, that they just, all they want to see is what they would see if they were there at your place today. And it's I think you're right in what you're saying. Sometimes we can overthink and try and give too much. When in reality, they just want to see what they'd see if you've seen the horse at Karakadam tomorrow.
And if you want to sell your farm, put a nice farm video up on your website, put your website on the bottom of the page. If they want to go and see your farm, they'll go and see it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's
shouldn't give away all my secrets. I might delete that.
But it's not like, we could go on for hours, as I say. But it's not rocket science. It's just about, you know, trying to visualize what it is that my people want, you know, what our people want. And sometimes you can sometimes get the wrong information because you're too close to it.
Yeah.
When
is that one of the struggles? I should let you go, but is that one of the struggles sometimes, that when you go to a sales, people put a reserve on a horse and you open up the piece of paper and you see the reserve and you think to yourself, oh, this could be, and sometimes they exceed it. And you're like, well, I didn't see that one coming as an auctioneer. But at the same time, trying to coax that person that then doesn't sell a horse because it doesn't meet the reserve, and just trying to say to them, listen, you know, is that one of the biggest struggles?
Oh, it's a very big struggle, because you're trying to match expectation with
ability. Sometimes it's so simple, isn't it?
Yeah, you're on the pendulum. You know, if someone's trying to get something for the least amount they want, and you're trying to sell it for the most you can get for someone. It's a real balance, and I don't think any auctioneer is immune to that. Doesn't matter how good you are, if you can't get the money. I remember long time ago, I did a ram sale, it was, for a guy, and it didn't go quite to plan, and it was me and another auctioneer, and we sort of vacated the premises reasonably sharpish afterwards. Things were a little bit hostile. I remember going back at the time to the guy who was sort of my boss, so I was doing a lot of, he was my mentor, you know, and I said to him, look, we had a shocker, you know, the fella's filthy at me, this, that, and everything. And he said, if you want to continue being an auctioneer, you have to make peace with the fact that if it's a good sale, it's about them, and if it's a bad sale, it's about you. And if you can accept that, you will survive. But if you think that every bad sale is about you, you won't last 5 minutes. These all sire, confirmation, breeding, type. That's not your fault.
And also two people, isn't it?
Exactly. And don't get me wrong. We auctioneers do make a lot of cock-ups. Don't get me wrong. We do. We're human. Yeah. You know, like everyone. But you're in a vulnerable position sometimes. But most of us have got big enough egos that you just bounce a lot of that off.
Sure, people with big egos that put their hands wide apart, looking like the prophet. Cam, thank you very much, mate. I've enjoyed this. I've enjoyed your hospitality, I must say, even albeit only for the one day, since I did come a day early. But no, truly, I must say thank you very much to NZB and Woodlands. It wasn't something that was on the radar probably 12 months ago, and I can't wait to probably get back to the yearling sales back in February. So,
and we thank you, Paul, because you know, like, when we first come in contact, we were looking and staring down the barrel of not being able to visit our clients in Victoria or Australia, you know, anywhere in Australia. And to be fair, we still haven't been back there over 12 months, you know, well, longer than 12 months ago. So, like, you've played a real big part in what we do. And that's not to say we're not going to go. We are going to go back there. We want to do that. But you are now part of what we do as far as selling horses. So I thank you and congratulate you for everything you're doing for all angles of the industry.
No, I just love it. It's all good, mate.
So as we've said it before, if our industry's going good, your industry's going good.
Yeah. Well, I think, I think every person needs to pull their head in and have a look at that. And I mean, from the top to the bottom, that Australia and New Zealand, like, it's quicker to get here than Perth.
Yeah.
That part is for sure. It's a beautiful country. You know, you guys, the trainers here race a lot of horses in Sydney especially. It's so easy to go backwards and forwards. But even countries like America and that, if harness racing is working globally, we are all going better. And I think that's one of the things we need to do, is actually everyone pull their head in and get together. And I must say, get out here to Karaka and just check this joint out. It's sensational.
Good on you, mate.
Cam Bray, thank you very much.